just the communication that we have right now is something that I really haven't seen in a long time in my football playing career in general. And the way that, you know, the communication between the coaching staff and us right now and how transparent we are with everything and how we're kind of like, okay, nice. Like the coaches are telling us exactly what we're going to do. And we're like, all right, nice. If we're going to do that, we're going to do it all out.
We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Lindsey Patterson, Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. It's a big basketball night on TV tonight. My Lakers are on the ropes, and I got vacation coming up next week. So I have no complaints. Things are good. How are you two doing?
It's funny, Tyler. I look forward now to these Lakers updates at the start of every podcast. And if the wrong result happens this week, we're going to have to come up with a different way to do our introductions because, you know, the Lakers are on the ropes. And if we don't have that to talk about at the start of our podcast anymore, what do we have left?
I just won't talk at the start of the podcast. I will not bring up basketball. Mind you, I do have to say this, and Lindsey and Charlie, you're there too. Every OTAs, well, the last two OTA practices, I don't bring up basketball at all. I just go, and I'm trying to obviously watch practice, watch Joe Burrow, watch all the teams, see who's injured, see who's playing. And every single time, the Lakers are brought up to me. I never bring it up first. I just get picked on, made fun of. My feelings are hurt. My feelings are a little bit hurt.
Okay, I feel bad because I was actually going to apologize on this podcast. The first thing I said to Tyler, and I'll be completely honest, I do not pay enough attention to the NBA. I think Steph Curry is a really fun player. Obviously, he's not playing in the postseason right now. But I know, you know, Tyler wants to talk NBA. Tyler's probably talking Lakers. And I didn't even see the score when I told him. And I didn't realize the Lakers, they're kind of struggling right now. They got to pull from behind, and we'll see what happens over the next couple of days. So I do apologize, Tyler. That wasn't what I was supposed to say to you when I first.
It's okay. You were like the fifth one that brought it up to me. So it was fine.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and talk about what people really care about in the football world. And that's quarterback Joe Burrow, week two of OTAs. And he is back out there. We've talked about it before when a little bit behind the scenes right now, when you go to OTAs, we are there the first Tuesday of the week of OTAs. It's 3 days. They'll finish up today. We're recording on a Thursday. And there's a certain period of time where we're allowed to video what's going off. And after that time, we can still stay there, but we cannot video or take any photos. So if you see things or you hear things later of what players are doing, that probably happened after, if there's not video to follow that up. And that's when quarterback Joe Burrow was throwing 60 to 65 yards. Obviously, some fans, they caught a little bit of it up on the famous bridge in Cincinnati to record that what Joe Burrow is able to do. What does that mean, you guys? We've talked about being surprised where Joe Burrow is. He's out there participating in OTAs in week two, but he's slinging the ball. And we've talked to CJ Uzama, Tyler Boyd. They jokingly said that there's a little more zip to the arm strength from Joe Burrow right now.
Yeah, so Joe Burrow's 26 weeks into his rehab process as of actually Wednesday. So this is his beginning of his 26th week. And he said last week that he was around 85% his surgically repaired left knee. So that is a great sign. That's further along than a lot of people anticipated. And every week he should get a little bit better. His legs should get a little bit stronger as long as there aren't any setbacks. And from what we're seeing and what we're hearing out of the Bengals locker room right now is there have not been any setbacks and he's actually ahead of pace. This week I did see him throw some 40-yard passes and that's an indication that he is gaining more strength in that left leg. And, you know, a lot of people do think that, you know, throwing power is, you know, all about the arm, but the legs impact throwing power a lot too. And Joe Burrow's strength in those legs, that is going to help him, you know, deliver the ball with more zip and more velocity. That's what a lot of people are talking about right now. And like you said, Lindsey, CJ Uzama and Tyler Boyd, they both took notice of Burrow's velocity throwing the football. In the last 2 days that, you know, the last two practices that we saw, of Joe Burrow. I did notice that, you know, he was delivering the football with a lot more crisp and passes with short and intermediate throws. Those passes did look crisp. So, you know, those deep passes, that's the one that we really have to pay attention to. He said this offseason that, you know, he's putting more of an emphasis on his deep throws. That's an area he wants to get better in. He averaged, I believe, 6.7 yards per pass attempt in 2020. That was near the bottom of the league. I think his passes beyond 20 yards, his passer rating was a 50.8, and that was, again, at the bottom. So he wants to get better in that area. And the positive thing is that, you know, he knows that he struggles with throwing deep passes. And so that is something that he's putting an emphasis on, and he's working on it. And I think, you know, this offseason, working out at Black Sheep Performance and getting his knee stronger, but getting his entire body stronger, that's only going to help him in that area.
Yeah, so when Joe Burrow stepped back and threw those long passes at OTAs on Tuesday, that in a lot of ways is what OTAs and this process is all about. There were a couple noticeable parts to it. One was building rapport and building chemistry on that deep ball with T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd. But the second part of it, too, was in classic Joe Burrow form, there was the competition of it aspect. You know, just watching it, I saw Burrow and Brandon Allen going back and forth, trading words, trading dimes. And again, finding ways to have fun and improve and build on these overall areas you're looking to work on during OTAs. As I was watching this happen, I was thinking, what would this week look like if Joe Burrow hadn't torn his ACL? What would Joe Burrow's offseason be about if there was no recovery to track on a weekly basis? And the speed of his ball, the arm strength improvements that he's working on, I think those would be the story of the offseason for him. If there was no ACL injury, the highlight of OTAs, even more than Joe Burrow showing up, would have been him working on that deep ball and that precision that we saw him practicing at the end of OTAs on Tuesday. Joe Burrow now gets to do some of that, gets to have that part of the experience too. It's not all about knee recovery anymore. Joe Burrow is actively working on the area of improvement that he's looking to make the most progress in, and he had some fun with it too on Tuesday.
Yeah, that was Joe Burrow's biggest thing. He told us back in January he wanted to be at OTAs no matter where he was with his knee. It's at 80 to 85% as of last week, because just communicating with his receivers out there, even Jamar Chase told Jeff Hobson yesterday, we look at each other and we already know what we're thinking. I think that's the biggest thing with some of these wide receivers. We've talked a lot about the wide receiver core with Cincinnati Bengals compared to the other AFC North. With the addition of Jamar Chase, you got T. Higgins in year two, the full year with Burrow. If that happens, obviously health is the number one thing. And then you have Tyler Boyd out there, the communication, just getting comfortable with those guys. And that's what they're really gaining from these OTAs with minicamp right around the corner. I put this out on Twitter because I just had this thought the other day when I think of the biggest story is Joe Burrow. Besides Joe Burrow going into this 2021 season, who is the second most important player on this roster?
So I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm going to go offense and defense. But when I'm going to answer on the offensive side, I am going to say the entire starting offensive line. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to be like you in the questions of the week, Lindsay. So okay. I'm going to cheat a little bit. You know, my answer is going to be broad, but on the offensive side, it's the entire O-line. Obviously, it's extremely important for them to stay healthy. They need to build some continuity and play a lot better as a whole. And, you know, why I picked them is because if the offensive line plays better, then the Bengals can showcase all their skill position players that they spent money on, draft capital on. Joe Burrow can stay healthy. Joe Mixon has more running room. Jamar Chase, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins. The Bengals have really good skill position players. But if you can't protect Joe Burrow, he cannot pass to those skill position players. And Joe Mixon won't have any running room. So everything will won't be as productive and won't move in a cohesive manner and way. They won't accomplish their goals if the offensive line is sub-mediocre. So that's why I'm saying the entire offensive line. And on the defensive side of the football, I have to say Trey Hendrickson. He's the highest paid defensive player in franchise history. He had, 13.5 sacks last year with the New Orleans Saints. It was his first double-digit sack season. And the Bengals had 17 sacks as a whole last year as a team. So they certainly need help in that department. And the Bengals hope that last year wasn't an anomaly for Trey Hendrickson. And they need him to get double-digit sacks this season and going forward, because they made him the highest paid player, defensive player in franchise history. So he needs to back it up on the field. So he's the most important player on the defensive side of football for the Bengals.
First, when weighing offense versus defense for me, I will give, the advantage to the offense, because overall that's the more important unit, I think, in terms of the overall Bengals success. So that narrows down the players I'll pick from on this list. And Tyler, you hit on it a lot, but for me, just to narrow it down to one player, Jonah Williams, one of the first and biggest decisions the Bengals made this offseason was committing to Jonah Williams as a left tackle. That's the kind of move that you make that shapes your entire offseason. When you have dinner with Briley Reiff and Jeff Rubies, you're telling him he's going to play right tackle. When you have Jonah Williams on the roster and committing to playing him at left tackle, it makes it less likely that you go out and, say, draft Penei Sewell or a pure tackle in the second round and ask them to fill that role instead. We've talked about how much the Bengals have invested in their offensive line this offseason. They did get, I think, one of the best tackles to change teams in free agency and a second round guard. Those are big, but the biggest investment this team has made in the offensive line over the past few seasons is Jonah Williams. That means he should be the best offensive lineman on the team. And he would only has 10, 12 games of NFL experience. How he grows and whether or not he can be that staple at protecting those great edge rushers that the Bengals are going to face could be one of the defining things of the Bengals season.
See, I will agree with you, Charlie. I know it's easy to point in the direction of the offensive line. They have to be better. Joe Burrow coming off of an injury, and that's just been the biggest criticism nationally and obviously locally for a couple years right now. And you look at Jonah Williams, they are telling you right now he is your left tackle. The biggest concern right now, finishing a full season healthy, gaining chemistry, and what he's going to be able to learn from Frank Pollock. We've talked about it plenty of times with Frank Pollock in the room as the new offensive line coach. And even Jonah telling us this past week that Frank will go over technique until they get it. And I think that's going to be the biggest difference maker when you look at the offensive line. Since Charlie already said Jonah Williams, I'll have my second pick. And I'm not going to the defensive side, Tyler, because I'm not breaking my own rules to my question. I'm going with one player, and I don't want to copy off Charlie, but I would say Jonah Williams is number one. I'll go ahead and say Jackson Carman. I think to be determined on what the offensive line looks like week one, we are still in June. There's a big offseason left from the rest of OTAs next week, mini camp, training camp. I think we'll really get a sense of things and maybe even some preseason reps. But I think when you look at the guard position, it's their poorest link on the offensive line. What can this rookie do? Will we see a difference? Did they end up getting the guy they need and want who can change the offensive line at the guard position when working with a guy like Frank Pollock and having Jonah Williams out there, having Briley Reiff? If you have two strong tackles, that's definitely going to help your guard position. And I think that's to be determined on what Jackson will look like his rookie year and to be determined on what the offensive line looks like. But obviously, I think the second most important player is you have to point to the offensive line room. And I'd say Jonah Williams first, and then I'd have Jackson Carman second.
So I do have a question for both of you then. So does that mean you two believe, or at least you, Lindsay, you believe Jackson Carman is going to start as a rookie because he hasn't earned the starting spot yet?
That's why he's not my number one.
Okay.
He's not my number one. I will just say we won't really get a sense of that. And I feel like when we get into training camp, we'll really see who they're putting out there. And even if there's some preseason reps with this, you're going to have to with this offensive line right now to be determined on if Joe Burrow plays any snaps. But I think at the moment, he's a really important piece. He's one of the most important pieces in the weakest room on the offensive line. And I think it does change if you get a full season out of Jonah Williams, and Riley Reiff does give you enough at right tackle, enough at right tackle for 1 year. That's going to help with the right and left guard position. You know, I think that's one of the biggest difference makers. And we've talked him up. We've talked about him plenty of times when it comes to Frank Pollock. Is he going to be the difference maker with these guys? And so far, I believe it. When you talk to the rookies, when you talk to vets, talking to Jonah Williams just this past week, what they're gaining from this coach from just 2 weeks of OTAs sounds like a big difference. And that's only 2 weeks. They got plenty of more time in this offseason with it being just the first week of June right now. So if I were to guess in June, I'd say you have to put him out there. But there's still a couple months left. So
I'll say this. In a ideal scenario for the Bengals, their entire offensive line was healthy, I think they would want their starting offensive line to consist of Jonah Williams at left tackle, Quinn Spain at left guard, Trey Hopkins at center, Jackson Carmen at right guard, and Riley Reiff at right tackle. That is an ideal scenario for the Bengals, that all of them perform well and are healthy enough to play. That's the ideal starting offensive line for the Cincinnati Bengals heading into the season.
And you hope that's the case, because those are the players that this coaching staff targeted and said, these are the guys we believe can be starters at these positions. There's a little asterisk by Quinton Spain, just because obviously he's not on a record-setting contract or anything like that. But when you look at how much they've put faith into Jonah and Riley on the outside, putting faith into Jackson Carmen by drafting him as a guard and investing in that position switch, and then Trey Hopkins being on an extension as well, and then with Quinton Spain, what he did for the franchise when he was just there last season as a presence at offensive guard, and the improvement that followed, they have kind of put their mark on all five of those offensive linemen in particular.
Xavier Suofilo has a real good chance of starting too, though, at the guards, at either one of the guard positions. I know Lindsay doesn't want to hear that.
Well, it's not that at all. And it's unfortunate for Xavier, because he was dealing with injuries last year. Even when he came back, he was never 100%. So it's a fresh start. And Frank Pollock has said it plenty of times. He's not putting favorites out there or anything. He's putting the best five guys. And if Xavier wins at a guard position, he'll put Xavier out there. It's to be determined. I'm still not set in the guard position right now, but this team traded back because they felt comfortable with Jackson Carmen. Yes, they did gain more picks in the NFL draft, but we've talked about it leading up to April, of all the offensive line depth that this team was going to have. And I think when you look at them choosing Jackson Carmen, trading back for him, and you have Frank Pollock working with him, you hope he's starting week one.
Yeah. A second round pick. Obviously, there are a lot of second round picks that are contributors. I believe that last year, actually, there were more second round picks who played more snaps than first round picks. I forget the exact number, but there were more second round picks that contributed last year than first round picks. So the Bengals, as soon as they drafted Jackson Carmen, and during that press conference, they said he is going to have an opportunity right away to start at guard. And they said either guard spot. Now, they did re-sign Quinn Spain this offseason. As Charlie said, it was a short deal, kind of a prove it deal. Let's see what you can do again in 2021. Xavier Suofilo, he's on a multi-year deal. But from what I'm hearing, I do think that they believe Quinn Spain is, you know, a little bit ahead of both Jackson Carmen and Xavier Suofilo. So I think he is the front runner to start at one guard spot. And in my opinion, it's going to be that left guard. And then at right guard, it should be a battle, but they're going to give Jackson Carmen, Cincinnati native, Fairfield High School, by the way, we all know that. They're going to give him an opportunity and every opportunity to win that position battle because they believe in him. They, you know, targeted him all throughout the draft. They knew that this was the player that they wanted, and they want him to start his rookie season, but he has to earn it. And like you said, Lindsay, Frank Pollock doesn't play any favorites, and he is going to put the best unit out there, and he's going to have to earn it, and he's going to have to beat some veterans to earn that spot too. And you know, Michael Jordan is still in the mix too at a starting spot in playing. He struggled last year, but this will be his third season. He's working on his strength and his, you know, fundamentals. So there are some, you know, other sleeper players that still have an opportunity too, but ultimately they do want Jackson Carman to take stranglehold of one of those guard positions, preferably right guard.
I don't want to trigger anybody with the offensive line when I talk about depth, because when I bring up names like Michael Jordan, Fred Johnson, Hakeem Adeniyi, it brings back memories, I'm sure, of last season. And my point with that is this is depth. It's been a long time since the offensive line has had some depth. I know how a lot of people would feel if you insert some of those guys in.
Do they have depth?
I think having depth, I'll say this. I'm not saying these guys are going to – you want to plug these guys in. You want your offensive line starters to be healthy. My thing is you get a guy like Hakeem Adeniyi. And Dave Lapham is somebody's opinion who I truly, truly trust. And when he talks about Hakeem Adeniyi, he says if he works – and I feel like we're giving Frank Pollock a lot of praise on today's podcast with how much we've talked about him. But I'm just saying Hakeem, Fred Johnson – working with Frank Pollock could be different in development. And by development, I don't mean these guys are going to start or anything like that. I mean this more of your bench guys and possible if you had to plug them in at any moment. Because last year you didn't want them to be your starters right away, but this team didn't have a choice when it comes to health. And you look at the tackle and the guard positions. I'm just saying that as getting to develop with Pollock and maybe there could be a difference in some of the techniques that he's teaching some of the offensive linemen. All of that, we're not going to know. We're not going to know for a while right now. But I think to be determined. I'm not saying you want to plug those guys in, Tyler. I'm not trying to trigger any Bengals fans to get mad at me about that. No way. I say your offensive line should be Jonah Williams. At the moment, Quentin Spain is just out there. That's still to be determined if Quentin Spain starts week one. Trey Hopkins, if he's good to go, but the dude's been surprising me with his bounce back from the ACL right now, rehabbing that. Then you have Riley Reiff and then Jackson Carman. That's my offensive line. That should be your offensive lineup. All those guys are healthy. No, you know, no, that's where I'm going.
And what's fascinating too, is that between Fred Johnson, Michael Jordan, Hakeem Adeniyi and Xavier Suofilo, it's totally in the realm of possibilities that one of them gets cut before the season. Just when you look at how many offensive linemen the Bengals have and where they already have depth or newer pieces that they brought in the draft, those are players that by even like week two and week three last season, you know, you can make the valid argument that, oh, this is someone the Bengals should give a shot to be a starter the rest of the season. And for someone to be in that position then and this position now is a step forward. It is a sign of more depth.
It's awesome to, you know, as a fan of sports in general, right? Like you see a team win and you see how excited, like think the Bucks last year, Tom Brady absolutely just hammered, having a great time with his boys. Like I want that to happen. Like I want to see Joe Burrow absolutely hammered wherever we are and me just feeding him more drinks and just tossing. I mean, like that's the dream. Like that's why I play, to win and to have a good time with the boys. I want TB to be holding a bottle of Henny like J.R. Smith with the Cavs, with his shirt off, the entire off season. So you know what I'm saying? Like that's what I want. So, you know, seeing Chelsea win, seeing the scenes in the locker room, seeing Thomas come in and start spraying champagne. That's what I want. I want to be right after the Super Bowl. I want a bottle of champagne. I want to bust it open and just start spraying everyone with it. That sounded like I was an alcoholic. I'm not. But all the celebrations, there's alcohol involved. So, you know, I'm like, all right, like that's, I don't know. That's something that you dream of as a little kid. And that's something I still aspire for, and or, you know, that's what we're working for.
I know he made headlines after his press conference, and we've talked to him. He said he's 100% back. I feel like he's a welcome piece. Obviously, his season ended far too early, but he was gaining a connection with Joe Burrow. What does it mean to have CJ Uzomah back out there?
Yeah, he's a leader in the tight end room. He's one of the, you know, leaders on the entire football team. He's well respected. He always has, you know, a good attitude, even when the Bengals are losing. I really, you know, admire that about him. Just when we're in the locker room, when we were in the locker room in that 2019 season before the pandemic, you know, he always had a good attitude. And he was always optimistic, like you, Lindsay. Even when they were going through their, you know, losing stretch. But I think, you know, players gravitate towards him because he's always upbeat and has that positive mindset, even amidst all the losing that the Bengals have endured the last few seasons. But, you know, even on the field, I felt bad for him because even though it was a short sample size, he was off to a pretty good start in those two games and caught Joe Burrow's first touchdown pass. This was his season to shine without Tyler Eifert, but unfortunately went down with the Achilles injury. But from what he's saying, he's 100%. When we're looking at him at OTAs, he seems to be 100%. He said that during the Zoom press conferences this week. So I think that's going to be a welcoming, you know, addition back to the Cincinnati Bengals. He and Drew Sample, they're going to be the two tight ends, I believe, that are going to be 1 and 2 on the depth chart. CJ Uzomah, he's going to have that. That's another intriguing, you know, competition battle, though, between him, Drew Sample, and Thaddeus Moss as well, because, you know, those tight ends, the Bengals want more production out of that group because they didn't get much of it in 2020.
When you look at the Frank Pollock factor, if I were making a list of the two players I'm most interested to see how their roles change with Frank Pollock, specifically his role as the run game coordinator, number one would be Joe Mixon, and number two would be CJ Uzomah. Back when he was around, when Frank Pollock was with the Bengals in his first stint, the Bengals used CJ in a ton of ways. They did a lot of play action stuff, I heard, that season. CJ Uzomah lined up at fullback a few times. They were very creative in how they moved him around the field. They used their tight ends differently then. Obviously, they had a different cast of players, but CJ Uzomah's versatility could go a long way to the team establishing some of the wide zone principles that Frank Pollock likes. And then, of course, there's his chemistry with Joe Burrow that he showed immediately in training camp last season and in the early phases of the 2021 season before Uzomah's injury. But he's one of those guys who, while you like, you probably know how you're going to use, say, Tyler Boyd or T. Higgins, CJ Uzomah kind of is more of a wild card in the offense, more of a chess piece that might be used at lining up in a variety of different spots. And with a new voice in the room in Frank Pollock, who might have a say in some of those, you know, schematic decisions the Bengals make, I'm very interested to see how that shapes up.
And credit to the medical staff. It's pretty impressive that he's 100% right now at OTAs in June after an Achilles injury. I say he's the Bengals' biggest hype man after that press conference. And, yeah, I'm sure happy to have him back in the tight end room. Moving on, questions of the week, Tyler. We'll wrap this up. Go ahead, throw it at us.
So the first one is, you know, related to what I did over the weekend. So I covered a professional track meet, and during the men's and women's 100 meters, there was an electric timer to track their 40-yard splits. And that was, you know, designed just to compare, you know, the professional track runners to NFL players running 40s. So the fastest time on the men's side was a 4.19 in 40. And the fastest time on the women's side was a 4.45. So the NFL's official 40-yard dash record, we all know, is former Bengals wide receiver John Ross, who's now with the New York Giants. So since John Ross is gone, who do you guys think would run the fastest 40 on the Bengals squad right now?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Off the top of my head, going names, Puka Williams, I think, would be up there. I think Jamar Chase would be close. I think Darius Phillips, he might be the answer, just with pure breakaway speed. But those were the first three players that popped into my head.
I'm still thinking. I'm still thinking, Tyler. While I think, go ahead and go with your guess.
I would go Brandon Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I'm going to steal it. I'm going to steal it. All the memories from last season. You know what's crazy? We've talked about all of the offseason moves, additions, offensive line, Jamar Chase, all that. Brandon Wilson, man, what an underrated piece on this team right now.
Yeah.
Low-key, my favorite moment of the entire 2020 season was his kick return against the Giants. It was a moment where the Bengals offense was struggling. It was a stretch of those games post Joe Burrow's injury. And just the entire sideline goes nuts when he returns that kick for a touchdown. That was fun to watch. I look back fondly at that score.
He's been a Pro Bowl alternate the last two seasons too. So
deserved.
That's your pick too, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'll go with Brandon Wilson. He's just okay. A rated piece on the team.
Okay. So my second question of the week. I think I text you guys this right before the podcast, but I'm going to bring it up as my second question of the week. Pro Football Focus ranked the Bengals as the 12th best receiving unit going into this season. But I know some fans might disagree with that. They did rank them as the best unit in the AFC North heading into this year. Do you two agree?
I said back in our text message, and I'll say it again, and I feel very confident in saying this. I said a couple weeks ago, and you know what? Twitter, social media handled it okay. I think the Bengals have the best wide receiver core right now in the AFC North. I think overall in the NFL, I'd put them at 10, in the top 10, right at 10. Could they improve? 100%. But right now, Jamar Chase is a rookie. T. Higgins coming into year two, which I think is going to be underrated and impressive. And then you get Tyler Boyd out there at the very moment, top 10. And that could change.
Top 10. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's higher than that. I think it's 5, 6, 7, that range. You read the article, it says like, oh, the Bengals have a great group of wide receivers, but they won't get enough from, they mention the tight end position specifically with Simple and Uzama. And I just shared some of why I think Uzama could play a role this season. Well, he's not one of the premier receiving threats for tight ends. I don't know that the Bengals offense is built around that anyway. And you have a group of, you're starting three receivers plus Auden Tate, plus Joe Mixon and Chris Evans to where Uzama and Sample are much lower options in the pecking order. They have a deep group and the top three star power at the top is much better than the groups listed above them. Teams like San Francisco and I forget the others that were up there. Like, even Tampa Bay, which was number one, you're going to put all that stock into Antonio Brown. I'm not sure that I see him as that kind of receiver right now.
So I'll say this. I talked to Chad Johnson this week, and he would disagree with that ranking. I won't say what he said because that's going to be on a story on Cincinnati.com, but he disagrees with it too.
He disagrees with PFF. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I mean, I know Chad. Chad's like the best receiving core in the league. Sorry if I'm just a little
spoiled, but you're in the ballpark, Charlie. You're in the
ballpark. We all know Chad Johnson.
He didn't say the best, but you're in the ballpark. I'll just say that.
Chad Johnson is another biggest hype man. He's the gift that keeps on giving for the Cincinnati Bengals in the NFL. I'll just say that
He has a big fight this weekend too in Miami.
Yeah, no, I'm not even surprised. He is. He's going to keep the gift that keeps on giving forever, Chad Johnson, Cincinnati, and the NFL. Well, that's it for your questions of the week.
That's it, unless you two have a question.
Got nothing. Charlie has nothing, but we have plenty on Cincinnati.com. Charlie, Tyler, what's up there?
So Trey Waynes opened up this week about how last year was frustrating for him on and off the field. It was more than just his injury. CJ Uzama, we discussed it in the podcast. He's fully back healthy from a torn Achilles. We got to talk to him on Zoom this week, and the Bengals, all 10 players of their 2021 draft class, they are now officially signed. So I have a story on that as well. And then I teased it, but my conversation with Chad Johnson will be up later this week as well.
I'll have a lot of Reds coverage up this week. I'm making a trip down to Louisville to see how Joey Votto is looking down there.
Make sure you check it out, Cincinnati.com. Bengals week 2 OTAs wrapping up week 3 next week. We'll have you covered live from Paul Brown Stadium on Tuesday. Plenty of Bengal and Reds content from Charlie and Tyler over on Cincinnati.com. EQ Sports on Instagram, EQ Bengals, and make sure you check it out on the Bengals Beat podcast.